¿Qué es? Okay. And in 1 minute, I'm going to initiate. Okay, since it's a few seconds to go, I'm going to start the webinar and reach whenever you want. You can start when you see that people start joining. So good luck, everyone, initiating now.
So welcome to those that have joined. As always, I'm just going to give a couple of minutes for people to join, and we will kick off. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Okay, I think we will kick off today's webinar. And today we've got another exciting installment in our webinar series. We're taking a slightly different approach to normal. There'll be no presentation as such today, but I'm hosting a fireside chat around an important topic. And it's a topic that's often not understood, and a threat that's not protected against, definitely as well as it should be. And that topic is web exposure. And specifically, how your websites can and probably and potentially are exposed, and through factors that you can't directly control. And you know, one of those, for example, is third-party code, you know, being a primary example there. We're joined by Reflectives today, who's our partner to help us address this threat. And I will come on to allow them to introduce themselves shortly. You know, this web exposure is such an issue. We've actually seen and you know, actually being used to target payments websites that the PCI Council, since version 4, have included it as a key control in their PCI DSS standard. And we've seen some high-profile attacks. I think I was first really amazed. I'm going to admit that I was completely naive to the threat. Until the British Airways incident, I'm sure we'll come on to, one of our panelists will come on to at some point, that impacted a lot of their customers. And ironically, I read about that and learned about it when I was on a flight, although not BA, and but I'm sure that was entirely coincidence. So as a fireside chat, I'm obviously going to encourage my panelists today to get involved in every question as much as possible, but that also applies to you, the audience. So please use the Q&A function to ask any questions as we go, and when we'll finish up with the Q&A, and I will hand those questions over to our experts, put them on the spot on your behalf, and then see what answers we get. So that's enough from me for the moment. So I'm going to get out of the way, and Introduce our experts. So today we are joined by Dan Cohen. Dan is the security as a security cybersecurity entrepreneur with over 15 years of experience, currently serving as the CEO and co-founder of Reflectors, the web exposure company. He began his career in cyber research in the Israeli army and later joined Bugsec, one of Israel's leading offensive security companies. He then co-founded Cynet Security, where he helped lead product and R&D efforts from the ground up. And in 2018, Dan co-founded Reflectors, which helps organizations monitor, manage risks across their web ecosystem without deploying any code or any agents. We're also joined by Stephen. Stephen's our regional operations director, and previously chief operating officer of Adsigo. And he is responsible for the operational area of overall audit execution and internal compliance. His team of auditors provide audit advisory and consultancy services in several compliance standards and looks back on an all-embracing audit experience in the various PCI standards like PCI DSS, 3DS, PIN, SSF, P2PE standards, as well as SWIFT customer security program assessment. So all things payment and compliance. And then last but not least, we're joined by Fabrizio. Fabrizio is one of our cybersecurity experts and solutions architect here at Integrity360. Fabrizio brings deep expertise in threat detection, incident response, and secure architecture design. And with a technical background and years of hands-on experience, he supports organizations in building resilient security strategies aligned with business needs. So bringing that technical security angle today. So that's our introductions. I'm just going to stop my screen from sharing so we've got a good view of all of our panelists and then jump down into our questions today. So firstly, I'll just say thank you to all my panelists from joining. I don't know if you want to say a very quick hello, and then we'll kick off this fireside chat. Oh, we're all still on mute there. So I'll tell you what, well, I'll jump on rather than the lows, and we will jump into the fireside questions. If I can just ask you all to come off mute so that we can start engaging in some of the questions. And Fabrizio, I see that you're the first one off mute, so I'm going to direct the first question your way.
I drew the
So
tension by myself.
yeah, exactly. This fastest finger first always wins. So websites have become a major attack surface, but many security teams still focus on infrastructure and cloud, which is obviously part of your wheelhouse and expertise. But what are the top web threats that get overlooked, and why do you think this gap exists?
So I should think that this gap exists because, I mean, after all, we're only humans. So we tend to practice and overpractice whatever we know best. So we tend to kind of postpone the things that kind of derail our train of thought, so to speak. So in today's context and the topics we're going to treat today, I think the main issues, the main threats are in the form of form checking, DOM-based attacks, or anything that manipulates at runtime the document object model, malicious third-party JavaScript, which are a huge part of the new threats that are emerging and the ones that you were referring to earlier, Richard, in your introduction. So these are the gaps that we know exist. The reason why they persist and why we are having trouble facing them and solving them is that we typically don't have logs, we don't have telemetry for them because they don't happen inside our infrastructure. They happen somewhere else, specifically in the user's browsers. So it's in a way, it's out of our control, out of our measurement. I also want to say, maybe also outside of anybody's clear area of responsibility. So if something bad happens, and it happens in the browser, in the user's browser, whose fault is it, right? Who takes responsibility for it? Is it the DevOps responsibility? Is it the IT admin responsibility? Is the web admin responsibility? It's unclear. So of course, I mean, again, we're only humans. When something really bad happens, everybody hopes it's someone else's fault and someone else's responsibility to take it away. So there we are.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really important point. Who's responsible for it? I suppose ultimately it's the organization that's serving up that content. But I said at the very start, a lot of it's outside of your control. And I'll come down into those in a second. But I guess just following on from that, I think there's probably a challenge with actually being able to classify and understand those threats. So I don't so how effective really, Fabrizio, would you say that today's frameworks or classifications, MITRE ATT&CK being a great example, are focused on helping defenders understand this threat? I mean, I'm not sure that I've seen it in the kill chain when it comes to the MITRE ATT&CK, but it is very much a concern. So something that gets lost in the weeds, I'd say.
Well, I mean, absolutely. So that's a very big problem. We don't have a taxonomy to describe this type of threats. Like you said, the MITRE ATT&CK framework and defend as a consequence does not describe precisely this type of risk. We can sort of place them into existing TTPs like input capture, browser session hijacking, but it doesn't really describe the crux of the matter, the heart of the matter, which is where this happens, which is typically outside the defender's control. So that's a, this is also true for us. Other frameworks such as the CVSS or Microsoft Stride, they also fall short in describing this kind of threat. And this is a problem in itself because lacking a formal definition, we can't place these threats into a framework for threat modeling. So it is harder to design a defense against this type of threats because we can't describe it properly.
Yeah, dude.
And if I can add, and I fully agree with what Fabrizio said, the idea of who is responsible to it, I think it's one of the core problems. When you think about a third party sending a code on your own website, it's not something we have in the normal SDLC process, but you're usually building a program, compile, code review, static, and then go to production. Because the way websites are built and because the way third parties, in theory, have full access to the site, they can actually change your website on your production environment without you even know about. So who we need to protect? Sometimes clients asking us, Facebook changed my code. What do you want me to do? You want me to fight Facebook? No, I don't want you to fight Facebook, but you need to understand that you actually gave Facebook access to do whatever they want on your own website. You will never do it in a normal application, right? You will have supply chain, TPRM, vendor assessment. But because it's a bit uneducated area, as we said in the beginning, yes, people think it's Pixel. What can Pixel do? Pixel can do whatever it wants in the site. It can erase the site if you want. It's not really a pixel. And that's, I think, part of the problem. This is because some of the reason the frameworks are not really speaking in that language. Where your responsibilities stop and the third parties begin, especially when the third party have full access to your own environment.
Yeah, no, I think that, Joe, and you sort of referenced Facebook, which you'd hope would you'd put them in the good guy camp as much as possible. But when people are using open source third party scripts that are being called that can be changed by not an organization but from others, then it just it increases that risk. Overall, and I'll tell you what, you sort of mentioned pixels. I know there's tag managers, there's third-party scripts. I wonder if just from the just to start sort of like really just diving down. Well, actually, what are pixels? Why are they used? And what is the threat that they're kind of facing? And the same with sort of tag managers. I appreciate that the third-party scripts have kind of covered, but it'd be good to understand for the audience to understand actually in a bit more detail what are they and what's the threat that they pose.
So, Pixel, for example, it sounds like it's just a small image, a pixel image that you can use. But actually, the way that websites are built, all those pixel tags or whatever you will call it, are actually a line of code, JavaScript code that developers puts on your website. But because the way the website is working, after you put the line of code on the site, the third party have full control to change it. So if you have a pixel and you're telling, I want to load a small image from Facebook or TikTok or whatever the third party you decided to use, whatever run under the pixel is fully under the third party control. Now, with JavaScript, by nature, that's how JavaScript is built, can change the site, can keylog all the user inputs, or can redirect the user for a phishing or malicious site, or just collect user data and send it to whatever it wants. It's not a matter of being malicious or not malicious. You don't need to hack the website to do it. It's part of the events possible by the JavaScript itself. And that's why I think the reason sometimes people or security guys don't really understand the full risk of putting a pixel on the site. The marketing coming to them and tell them want to do a pixel because we're running campaign with TikTok and want TikTok to be able to track the visitors on my site. Perfect. I think it's good use of because you want to increase your performance of your site. But whatever is going to be run on those pixel is a full control code by the third party that can do whatever the third party want. Now, if you trust the third party, it's perfect. But even when we are trusting third parties, we have TPRM for a reason. We have supply chain risk for a reason. You want to do validation. You want to do continuously monitoring to make sure they're only doing what they're supposed to do. Mistakes can happen. Misconfiguration can happen. Even the best third party in the world can, by mistake, have a default settings that collect extra data not required or by or breaching GDPR or whatever compliance you are in fact there. You need to have some access to it. And today, you don't have the third party will do whatever you want, and you will hear about it if something really goes wrong or not.
Yeah. Well, I suppose just stay with yourself for a second there. It kind of begs the question, well, actually, why aren't traditional tools catching these issues? I mean, quite often, any kind of web application or web front end will have a WAF, web application firewall in front. But why are these issues really slipping through that net?
So I would say that we all grow up in what we are calling OAuth Top 10. I'm talking in the web area. We all did OAuth Top 10. I think also my panelists here, we all did SQL injection in youth and XSS. And I think all the audience did it when we started. And OAuth Top 10 is to find vulnerabilities, bad code, bad handling, the bad permission handling. I think that the big change that happened here and what we are calling today web exposure is that it's no longer looking for vulnerabilities, not looking for bad mistake by developers. You can have a very legitimate code on your website, the pixel we just discussed. But by nature, the pixel doing stuff you don't want it to do. Not because you can infect SQL injection and run a code on it. Not because you can hack the code. That's because the code can do it by itself. And at least when I ran one of the biggest offensive security companies in Israel, we call it business logic issues, like attacks that actually overcome the logic of the site. So in theory, WAF will never find it. WAF is used to monitor the traffic, layer 7, see payloads, block, not block payloads. But all those third parties are not even part of the WAF. The WAF is not there. You're speaking directly with Facebook, with TikTok. Your user communicated with those third parties. Your user loading stuff from the open sources directly from GitHub or CDNJS or whatever they decide to use. And you're hoping that it's secure there and there's no vulnerability there. So that's not enough. WAF is important. Yes, I'm not saying ignore your WAF. WAF is a key security tool today for websites. But it's only seeing the communication between the user running payload, running vulnerabilities, running code on your own website. What we believe that the risk is much bigger now. And all the examples we gave now, we're going to do in this session today, are examples that probably will never be saw by the WAF. The WAF is not there. It's not in the communication between the user and the web server itself.
Yeah, and as you say, that kind of view today and now, and it's probably always been, but we've just been completely naive to it as we grew up, as you say, developing websites and code without any real consideration for the wider impact there. Stefan, I don't want to bring you into the conversation. I don't want to leave you out. But from your perspective and your view, what's the starting point to getting visibility into your web environment, and how can organizations secure their app supply chain from there?
Yeah, that really is a great question that most organizations have little to no answers for. Even though it starts with a very, very simple first step, you do take an inventory. You look at your website, you try to find out what scripts you're running, what services you're running, whatever else, what pixels, what tag managers you're including. There usually is a very complex web of dependencies behind that. So you're website may be pulling in scripts from third parties in addition to the ones that you provided yourself, and these third-party scripts may even end up pulling in more third or rather fourth-party tools or other weird code, and all of that in turn will get access to your website. So you need to have a certain visibility of what your website is doing, right? So what you will need to build really is an inventory. It's a painful process as a first step because it does take a little while. If you do it manually, there are obviously tools around for that. Eden can probably talk about more about that. But ultimately, this is the very first step that you need to do. Once you have that inventory, what you do is you start to monitor. You start to monitor what your script, what these scripts, what these, what this code really does. Okay, so you have an idea. You build a baseline. You get an idea of when a script behaves oddly, when it starts sending data to locations where it usually doesn't send data, where it's not supposed to send data. Say you're, I don't know, if since it has access to the website, to all of what you do, if you have a payment page, for example, your payment data doesn't only get sent to the responsible processor, but it may also get sent to some other website in some possibly shady location that doesn't really treat the data with the respect that it deserves. So this is one of the items that you will monitor. You will get the idea if there are any new or unauthorized tools, scripts, tags, etc. appearing on your website, right? So inventory is all good and nice, but these websites are highly dynamic. So even a third party may change their code and you will have no idea because you're not part of that approval process, if there is any, right? So you will get an idea, which if you start the monitoring or if you do the monitoring, you will get an idea of what changes on your website without anything that you really have in your hands that is under your control, right? And thirdly, you do need to secure that part of the supply chain. So what you typically do is you set policies for what's allowed to run. You can deny certain scripts the permission to run. You also have opportunities to limit the permissions for scripts to access certain elements of data. You don't want your marketing scripts or your payment pixels or your Facebook pixels to have access to your payment forms, for example, right? So ultimately, you're continuously auditing for any changes, for any new risks, right? So to sum this up, really, it comes down to discovery, finding out what you have, continuous monitoring, and controlling what you have under on your website, right?
Yeah. That has become, as I said at the intro, a focus for PCI DSS, as that's, you know, being recognized as a real challenge, or something that's, you know, putting payment data very much at risk.
Indeed, it's actually something that has been recognized by the standards bodies quite a few years ago, when we saw the first compromises happening with entities that relied on third-party scripts or iframes being included to provide the payment pages. And when those got compromised, the PCI Security Standards Council, the payment standards body, basically started to react, and they've built two requirements that address this, that specifically call out the items that we just talked about. They require you to have an inventory of the scripts you have. They require you to have a justification, right, of what you have. Why are you using that? You know, just because, or because it's nice, or because marketing wants it, isn't really a good idea, or isn't really a good excuse to have something like that. The PCI people want you to have a method to ensure the integrity of these scripts, to make sure that there are no untoward changes, right? So that the core part that accepts the payment in this case really is something that you can trust.
Indeed, and I suppose it's a combination of the technology you have to do it and the governance process that runs around it to be able to actually manage that. So I think we've kind of walk through some of the challenges and the threat that it faced. And I think we can start working towards, well, actually, what is the answer? What is the right way to approach it? And as we kind of dive in, I just want to start going back to yourself, Fabrizio. From a slightly different perspective, but as we work our way towards it, you know, everyone's talking about sort of shifting from, you know, reactive to proactive security. But from a web exposure perspective, what is good actually look like? You know, how do you prioritize? How does the prioritization help reduce the noise?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, in order to even enter the conversation, a kind of proactive posture relies, I would say, mainly on two factors: visibility of what is going on and monitoring, which is something we can't achieve without the proper tools. And that's why Reflectus is with us today. So basically, you need to set your expectations about how your website and the scripts and every moving part of your web application is supposed to behave. Then you need the tools to track and to monitor this behavior. Otherwise, you can't contain a threat. You can't remediate it. So I guess it's like yourself said, Stefan. There's the process of establishing inventory of the scripts that run onto my web application, how they are expected to behave, and I need to continuous monitoring to assess the fact that they are in fact behaving like they should. Because of course I have added some functionality to my application, but I've given up some of the control that I would have if I had developed it. So I have a third party solution effectively running into my estate, so to speak. So the control is elsewhere. It is under someone else's control. A script that behaves in a way now, maybe tomorrow behaves differently. So I need the tools to be able to monitor this type of behavior. So yeah. Without this control mechanism, we have no way to implement. Well, we barely have time to react, let alone to be proactive and prevent bad things from happening.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of it. And just to keep working away towards. Sorry, Dan, did you have something to come in on there?
Yeah, so if only I can add, and I fully agree with what Fabrizio said. So when we think about proactive in web exposure, we are not looking really for vulnerabilities. As I said earlier, I think the entire ecosystem we all use or looking for vulnerabilities, finding more CVEs and closing them, and that's okay. I'm not saying it's bad to find the next vulnerability, but the way I believe and also Reflectus is doing is you don't look for vulnerabilities. You don't look now today for the breach, for the bad malicious code, or for the misconfiguration pixel. It's maybe not going to be today or tomorrow. You need to create your own inventory, as Fabrizio said. Understand exactly which third parties, which open source are running on your site, but also to mark you, and today there are tools doing it automatically, to mark you risks that you have by using those third parties. So for example, if you have amazing open source, but it's stored on a server, the server is an open server that everyone can change it because it's like a CDNZS or some kind of open repository, maybe today it's not a risk. Maybe today the code is okay. But can you promise me that in 3-6 months, nothing is going to be changed and then it become a risk? So the idea and the way I believe in being proactive is instead of looking for vulnerability and wait to the alert to be triggered, hey, you have a malicious code or misconfiguration, if you have a strong inventory and you understand what are the risk factors, what can change a good script for a bad script, what can change a legitimate behavior to a bad behavior, then you can mitigate the risk. For example, one of the key alerts we are providing today is you have a script that loading from remote server on your login pages. Because login page is a very sensitive location. You have user, password, ID, whatever it's your assets. I will say never load scripts from external entities on a very sensitive location. If you need to run a script, open source, because that's the way your website is built, put it on your own server that you can monitor in them. So if you would now you come to a CISO and you ask him, which type of scripts you have that running outside of your environment, you will never know about it. It's not something people are tracking today. So for me, this is a good example to how you've been proactive. Put the script on your own servers and have an inventory of them. Make sure that if you are using pixels, because you need to use pixel, make sure you're using them today with the least privileged access. For example, those TikTok and Facebook, you have a control panel. The control panel, you can decide what type of data they can collect. You can either go whitelist and say you're only allowed to collect, I don't know, address or user, whatever you decide to do, but you can also mark there, collect whatever you can to do a good work. So for sure, if your marketing by mistake choose to do collect whatever you can, even if today you don't have password in the page, you don't have, but tomorrow your marketing do at Saints and now we have password and credit card, it's going to collect the credit card. And we actually had several clients then send credit card data to third parties, not because the third party was malicious, not because it changed the code, it's because the setting was collect everything you have on the page. So that's a risk. So for us, that's the idea. Get your inventory, as Fabrizio said now. Of course, remove the script you don't need to have. If you have a mistake there, leftover code, remove it. But after that, make sure you're using them in the right place, in the right settings. And then even if something changes, you already were proactive. You already limited the breach. You already logged them for accessing the sensitive code. Even if you have a good code, it now become malicious. But it's running only on a marketing page that don't have any data there. It's a maintained risk. But if the same code running on your online environment where you have your account details and numbers and balance, now you have a problem. And now when you have a breach and you're going to be alerted, whatever, by Reflectives or other tool, you have a malicious code, that's already too late. You're already leaking your data. You don't want to wait for the vulnerability to happen. So I think the proactive is key here in web exposure. Don't wait for the misconfiguration to happen. It will happen. That's cybersecurity. Reduce the risk now.
Yeah, indeed. And I appreciate we've got members of our individual marketing teams on the call, but it sounds like, in summary, marketing is the problem that we're all trying to defend ourselves against. There's the approach and the process. I guess what I'm curious about is, how are you approaching this differently as Reflectives? Obviously, being the CEO, we've got the right person in the room to be able to answer that question of built the organization, to be able to defend against these. How do you do that? What's the approach that you're taking? Obviously, we talked about that needing to move from augment the vulnerability scanning that we do on our own infrastructure. But how does Reflectives help with that other part, the things that are outside our control? What's your approach?
So our approach is really to create this inventory that Fabrizio said, a full inventory of your first party code, your own code, the third party, and even the fourth party code, the vendors. Yes, in the web, you have third parties that can load their own third parties. So first of all, the first item, get an inventory. Make the inventory smart inventory. What I mean smart inventory? There are many scripts on your site. A single vendor can have 5, 10, 15 different scripts on his own. You don't really care if it's Facebook script number 1, 2, 7, or 9. That's too much noise. You care about what Facebook is doing. You care about what TikTok, what's a Mixpanel, what Google Analytics is doing. So create them in a category that you can understand in the business way. I care about Google, I care about Facebook, I care about my own developer's code. Then after, continuously monitor those packets of scripts and validate that they're only doing what they're supposed to do. Even if they're okay now, I said it before, even if they're not malicious now, no one being hacked, look on the risk factors. And again, our tools and other tools can do it automatically. Make sure that even if they want to be bad or can be bad or can be breached, then you can detect it and be proactive. So continuously inventory, continuously monitoring, and of course, like a normal cybersecurity alerting or prioritization on alerting when something happened. I will say that I think one of the unique items that we try to do in Reflectives is that our platform is a fully, fully remote solution. So Reflectives is not installing even a single line of code on the website. And the reason why, like, there are many technical reasons, but if I make it short, we just discussed that we don't want to have third parties that doing stuff on your website that have full access. So I feel that to create a third party solution that will have a control of your website is actually a bit misleading the entire goal of the solution. So we created a full remote solution that can act as a user browsing your site, detecting all those third party applications and alert or help you not be alert on alert when something goes wrong. And the idea is that it's fully remote, so no access to PII code, no access to your own client data. We can't hurt the site or get a performance impact. So it's like very lean to our clients, but also to provide the full value as we just discussed. So it's the road we take to make like a full bulletproof solution in order to overcome this issue.
All right, very good. And but Stefan, I'm just going to come back to you. And I guess, you know, following on from that, you know, pretty comprehensive you know, description of what Reflect is and the tool you know, provides. You know, many teams struggle, you know, to manage scripts and these trackers across departments. You know, so this is a key and essential control that needs to be in place. You know, particularly, I guess, you know, is this the way to do it? You know, I'm thinking complex environments, because you know, I know that you and your team are involved in you know, helping customers with extremely complex environments. So this is the way forward.
Yes, in my mind, it is. The problem that we're facing is that modern websites, really, that there are too many cooks in the proverbial kitchen, right? So you have the marketing department that everybody seems to be bashing. They want their tracking pixels, they want their analytics tools. You have the product teams who integrate their chatbots, who want advanced personalization features. You have developers who may be pushing updates. Ultimately, there are so many people out there who do something to your website or to a website, that there's only the only way to get a handle on this really is some kind of a centralized management solution for that, where it can do what we discussed earlier: discover, monitor, and control. Right. So what it does is it will give the security teams, who are ultimately on the hook of making sure that nothing untoward happens to both clients and your own website, right? So you'll give those security teams visibility into what you have on those sites. They can be alerted. They can have their incident response on that. And that's much quicker if you do that centralized than doing it for X number of websites in dedicated and potentially very different solutions that are homegrown even and may or may not work, right? So with these requirements that exist for PCI that have become active at the beginning of this year, I'm sorry, in April of this year, what we're seeing with a large number of our clients who have homegrown solutions is that they are not as happy with them as they thought they would be. They always have dings and dents, and certain things work well, certain things don't work well. So a lot of them are actually looking at the established solutions, such as Reflectus or others, just to keep that going and to keep that that visibility, that centralized management, right? Again, gives visibility to the security team. It still allows the marketing and the product teams to use what they've been using, right? And it does greatly reduce the risk of data leaks or compliance violations.
Yeah,
right? you get a very good view as to how your risk actually declines by just having that visibility and all that stuff together.
Yeah, I bet it's quite the eye opener for organizations that didn't have it in place, and you know, being able to quickly inventory and see actually what the risk is, and you know, where all those pixels, tag managers, you know, tracking devices, just all suddenly there, where they're coming from, and definitely the data that's being scraped because of them.
Yeah, and even Stefan said rightfully about marketing and product, but today privacy become a concern. So we have privacy teams. If you're in Europe, we have the GDPR. They need to understand who is tracking user data. Those are third parties tracking user data. So suddenly you need to compare and make sure no one validating your cookie consent policy, or to make sure you don't have any third party collecting PII data, and then the privacy gets made. So as Stefan said, there are so many groups involved in the single website, and security somehow need to provide answers to all, or make sure that they are doing the right job here, the right work.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I think you know, we've been chatting for a good almost 40 minutes now. I do want to open up the floor to any attendees' questions. I think we've got one in the Q&A, but just please ask any questions, and as I say, put the team on the spot. So let's have a quick look here, and I can see that we are putting the team on the spot here. So the question is, threat actors keep evolving, now even using AI to scale attacks. What's the best practice can help organizations, or what what best practices, should I say, can help organizations stay resilient against fast-changing web threats. So I don't know who wants to come in on that that question first. Anybody want to put their hand up for that? I mean, actually, just the, and talk about AI being used to scale attacks. I think there's probably obviously a lot of hype, a lot of hype about AI and its use. And, but as always, I think with a lot of hype, suddenly some reality will come out of it. And I
I
suppose.
would say that. Sorry, I can't do.
No, I was just going to say, and I'm very interested in how that plays out against those web threats, and whether it's just, is it just the ability to profile and identify very quickly the which ones to attack and target?
So I think it's $1 million questions. I will be honest and say I don't know. I think that all of us are thinking how it can be evolved. I can say that as we all agree, there's always the race and AI. The attackers can use it. The defender can use it. I think that in at least in the web exposure, if you're going to this proactive approach, and you actually don't wait for the malicious code or someone to rewrite or change the code, because the payloads will be changed, and I'm sure AI can write much better payloads and create them polymorphic and make them almost impossible to detect by like vulnerability scanning or antivirus type scanning. I agree on that. But if I believe we'll go in the direction of actually proactive approach and actually remove the code from the beginning and don't allow them access to other places, you might be able to be on the winning side. I don't know. I actually don't know. Maybe in 5 years from now, you're going to call me in the webinar. I'm going to say, "Oh, I didn't see the internet change and they are into
Yeah,
the web." I don't know.
you didn't get that $1 million for answering the right question.
Maybe. But I think if you go proactive, not focus on vulnerability scanning, not just focus on static analysis, because that is it's nothing today. And think about those risk factors, you might be able to win or at least be ahead of the curve. But let's see what the others think.
Yeah, I think it actually applies across anything when it comes to AI. When we're thinking about security, is getting on the front foot and making sure it's not a problem in the first place. If we think about how AI is, realistically being used, it is to profile organizations mainly for phishing. To write code a bit quicker. So there's nothing massively new at the moment, really. It's just more sophisticated, a bit more complex, more volume. So I think you're right saying, be proactive, get on the front foot regardless of what it is, and do your best to prevent it from happening in the first place. And I suppose the other side of it is that, be prepared for it to happen, because chances are it will happen. So make sure that you're prepared overall, and whether that's minimizing your web exposure and understanding that the impact of it, or whether it's monitoring the threats that actually hit your environment and network. So I think I don't think we've got any more questions in the Q&A. So I am going to thank my panelists, Dan, Fabrizio, and Stefan for joining me today to walk through web exposure, the threats, the unknown threats, particularly from the third parties that we discussed. It's beyond just vulnerabilities in third-party applications you're running internally. It's also what the marketing teams are putting on their websites or need to put on the websites for legitimate reasons that are outside of your control. Being able to understand them, catalog them, build that inventory to then actually even be in a position to plan how do we protect ourselves from those that are not impacting important things like Stefan talked about from a PCI perspective. And in fact, actually, that British Airways example I touched upon at the very start was exactly that. So, subverting the payment process to steal the credit card transactions, which I can't remember how many millions that they made off with, but it was significant enough that I read it on a plane as breaking news. So I'm going to say thank you to everybody. Thank you for everybody for joining. I hope that was very useful. And obviously, if you need any follow-up information, please reach out to your account manager or any of us, and we can dive down into anything in a bit more detail. So it just leaves me to say thank you very much, and we will leave it here. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.